Welcome back to Off the Hour here on CKUT 90.3 FM. We're very glad to have Emmanuel Rosenthal in studio with us now. Emmanuel, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for inviting me.
One of the reasons we invited you is because this war on terrorism is spreading, and now it's going to Colombia, and it looks like it's even more evident now than ever that it's connected to oil. In Afghanistan, we only had pipelines that were being protected by this so-called war on terrorism, and now it really is about oil resources and land resources and cheap labor, if indeed this war on terrorism does spread to Colombia. And so one of the things that I want to talk to you about is the history of Colombia today. It's the oldest democracy in the Americas. Why is it called that?
Well, the oldest democracy in the Americas is a misnomer, but it's based on the fact that there are elections every 2 to 4 years, even though if you follow Colombia's history, the father of the current president was the president in the 70s, and he won through a fraudulent election. And then if you follow a family like the López or the Lleras and so on, you see how fathers and sons, because it's all men, inherit the electorate, and then they win the elections and so on. So it is... they maintain the semblance of a democracy through elections. Now, you say whether or not the war on terrorism will spread into Colombia now. And that is an absolute mistake. And the fact is, there has been a war on terrorism by the U.S. for many, many years in Colombia. In fact, it's not only about oil, but certainly about oil as well. Colombia is the preamble of the FTAA. The easiest way to summarize what's going on in Colombia is this. There are two things capital needs in the continent to fulfill its interests in a free trade area of the Americas. In fact, to create comparative advantages versus the other economic blocs in the world. And those two things it needs to cheapen the productive processes and increase corporate profit are access, free access to resources and territories on the one hand, and secondly, to dismantle social organizations and political organizations so that labor is made as cheap as possible in order to cheapen the production processes. So what is going on in Colombia for years, first under the excuse of the war on drugs, before under the excuse of development, and now the war on terrorism, has always been the same story. Colombia is in a strategic location. It's at the corner, northwestern corner of South America. It's right south of Panama. It's got two oceans. It's next to Venezuela. It's rich in all kinds of natural resources. It is needed for the Americans. If they manage to prepare Colombia, then from there they will take on the rest of the continent. What is happening in Colombia actually, and this is current history, is that it is the country with the worst inequity in the whole continent. It is one of the wealthiest countries in the continent, but because of that, precisely because of that, there is more poverty, unemployment, and exclusion in Colombia than anywhere else. One person is murdered in Colombia every 15 to 20 minutes. There are 2.5 million internally displaced people by force in Colombia, and nobody hears about that. There is a trade union leader murdered every 3 days in Colombia. 156 trade union leaders were assassinated last year. That is 80% of all trade union leaders murdered or disappeared last year and in the last 10 years in the whole world. So it is clear that there is a dirty war going on in Colombia, and the purpose of this war is to access resources, territories, and to cheapen labor, and also to extend the Colombian model, which is Plan Colombia, what is going on there now, to the Andean region.
where our own trade minister in Canada has made the connection between free trade and democracy. But the connection that you're making is free trade and violence. Are they inseparable? Can we have free trade without violence? At the Summit of the Americas last April, we saw the kind of military state that can happen at just a summit about free trade. What about a country where they're trying to enforce free trade policy? What happens there to the daily lives of indigenous people, to the daily lives of women?
Indigenous people, Afro-Colombians, which are 25% to 30% of the population, women's organizations, peasant organizations, labor unions in the country have stated clearly, the enemy is the economic model. The enemy is capital. I wrote a paper a few years back and researched globalization and violence, and I did not talk about war. Not a bullet crossed the paper I wrote. In spite of that, I was able to prove how globalization and the economic measures, by the way in which it actively creates poverty and misery, in the way in which it daily murders children by starvation all over the world, is violence. Globalization, neoliberal structural adjustment is violence, even if it doesn't shoot a bullet. But because people can't just die starving and do nothing about it, and they are going to protest or defend their rights, capital necessarily requires violence to maintain people excluded or to actually exclude them, as it's doing in Colombia. So there are three strategies that capital is using throughout the American continent and elsewhere, but beginning in Colombia where it's obvious. And the three strategies are, one, the economic strategy, bringing down to their knees governments and peoples and starving them and telling them there's no alternative, and that's violence. The second one is the military machinery, whether dirty war or the other war, which they say is not dirty. And the third one is the propaganda machine. Your internet, your television, your media that are constantly convincing people that Colombians are a bunch of drug dealers that kill each other for fun, when people here are willing to believe those lies and people who tell them have a very concrete interest. Go watch Collateral Damage, where the poor victim is Arnold Schwarzenegger and the Americans, and actually the victims are portrayed as assassins.
We're going to take a short break and come back right back with Emmanuel Rosenthal. Stay tuned right here to CKUT's Off the Hour. Welcome back to our conversation with Emmanuel Rosenthal. Hala is back, and she's got a question for Emmanuel.
Yeah, well, just in reference to a nation that is enduring violence for such a long period of time, and it's probably the same thing with the Palestinian people or with several other Arab countries, what would you say is the impact on a nation's psyche?
Yeah, even, and I'm sure it's the same elsewhere, I was doing precisely that before I left Colombia and I had to leave under threat, was doing research on violence and violence prevention. And we, one of the things we realized is if violence stopped today, it would take many generations to heal all the people that are affected by it, especially children. Imagine, for example, the children of people who have to grow coca crops because they cannot make an income or a living if they don't do that. Those children know that their parents have been stigmatized by the superpower of the world as criminals, that they're being persecuted, that the helicopters throw bombs on them when they've been claiming crop substitutions, for example. So those children are children of criminals who love their parents and who have been stigmatized as such. The entire country is like that. So generations have learned to live under violence. What we learned, and we shared it with other people in Latin America, is that violence in Colombia, as in many other places, has three causes. Mm-hmm. The main one and the backbone of the whole problem is structural. Inequity as a form of violence is the cause of everything else. People learn to live in violence because they return in social violence what they receive in structural violence. Mm. Hunger, exclusion, starvation are forms of violence, and that leads to the other ones. Mm-hmm. But then there's the second one, the lack of institutional legitimacy. Mm. If there's no justice, in Colombia, for example, there's 97% impunity for homicides, which means you can murder and nothing will happen to you. So you learn to take justice on your hands. Mm. There's a contradiction between legitimacy and legality. If you follow the law in Colombia, you starve or you're excluded. Therefore, it becomes legitimate, whatever is an illegal activity anywhere else. When you have that, you have to have violence. And then, of course, the third one, which is closer to the question you asked, the ethics of interpersonal relationships. When you grow in an environment where the reason of force has more force than than reason itself, then you learn that you defeat the argument of the other one by destroying the other one. Mm-hmm. So everybody becomes used to violence. And the combination of those three things establishes violence as a culture, as a way of life.
Social norm.
That's right.
Coming from Lebanon and growing up there during the war and violence, seeing violence as part of everyday life, when I moved here when I was 10, I did not understand why I was called an aggressive kid by everybody else around me. And it took me quite a number of years to understand my behavior. So basically what happens is that you have a behavioral problem when you are removed from that country, you've become isolated to a certain extent because other people do not understand your form of communication. And this is a huge, maybe you can tell us a bit about the communication there between young adults and other generations. And if you can tell us about immigration and young adults, do the educated leave because of the chaos and because people who are idealistic cannot live within that?
That's a huge comment. In fact, first of all, I agree with what you said. The feeling is the same. The fact that you learn to establish relationships based on violence and imposition, it's there, and that you become unaware of the fact that that's the way you do it.
Infringing other people's space and rights and continuing.
There's a difference between justice, what we call justice, which is the institutional machine, and the sense of justice. Mm-hmm. We develop a sense of justice in our relationships between each other. If you learn that for you to survive, the other one has to lose something, and that's a fact of life, then your sense of justice includes taking something that belongs to the other one, and you don't even notice it because that's the way it goes. But I'll tell you something that is a fact in Colombia, and which is incredible. First, the sense of joy in the music, the happiness, everywhere, all the time, and we have it. That's what Colombia is about. If I came here and I left you with the image of the fact that we kill each other all the time, I would lie to you. The same day somebody is murdered, people find a way to celebrate life and keep going. It's like the African Americans with the blues. The same happens in Colombia. Secondly, people in Colombia, if you look all over the country, fight for peace and defend peace all over the country. In fact, I'll tell you what people stand for. Three things. One, people, I mean most Colombians that have become invisible to the media or to anyone outside of Colombia. Three things. One, the defense of life by any means. Two, the defense and the achievements of social justice. And three, the respect for autonomies and differences. Now, these are contrary to government and U.S.-supported approaches. It's contrary to the ethics of the country and contrary to the institutions that exist there. In spite of all that, most Colombians, if you go there, you'll see it's a hospitable place and you'll be happy. And only reading the papers, you find out there's a war.
Well, it's we can name names here in terms of the corporations who are involved there. And I want to get to the point of what can people here in Canada do to make a connection between their resistance here and the resistance of the Colombian people you described. Because in the mainstream media, you only hear about President Pastrana and FARC. You hear nothing about the Colombian people. So what can we do here in Canada to support the resistance of the masses of Colombians there?
There are, first of all, underscore what you just said. Colombia is a political issue for Canadians. It is not, don't help us. I did not come here and we're not here asking for people's solidarity. We want Canadians to assume their individual and collective responsibility towards Colombia. Bananas, gasoline, flowers, gold, coffee, they're all cheap because there's blood in them. Every time you drink coffee, you're drinking torture, exclusion, displacement, assassination. That's what you have to realize, and Canada has benefited from it. Now, Canada is not a minor player. Right in Putumayo, the southernmost region of Colombia where Plan Colombia has been targeted, that area where there's air spraying, fumigations, and war by the U.S.-led Plan Colombia is rich in oil. If you look at the Colombian Petroleum Company map, you'll notice that 83% of the contracts for oil exploration and exploitation in this area have been granted to Canadian corporations. Alberta Energy Consortium, Talisman is in Colombia. There are many. Then telecommunications. In fact, Canada is the fastest growing investor in Colombia. Canada has huge economic interests in Colombia in war-torn regions. In fact, the massacres committed against by paramilitaries against gold mining peasants and our handcraft miners were committed in territories that are of interest to Canadian mining corporations. So first of all, it is a problem here. Canadians should demand from their government to change the policy on Colombia. And to do it which way? One, to condition investment in Colombia to the dismantling of paramilitary forces, which are in coordination with the Colombian government. Two, to stop funding the Colombian armed forces, who have the worst human rights record in the continent, and Canada is funding the Colombian armed forces and has actually sent helicopters to those armed forces. Three, the third thing that should be done is demand that Canada imposes a moratorium of investment in war-torn regions in Colombia. The incentive for war in Colombia and for abuses is the wealth in resources. If there is no investment, if there's moratorium, mm-hmm. the war will stop. Mm-hmm. So that has to be demanded from here. And the other thing is that the Minister Graham for Foreign Affairs, that he responds to the letters that Canadians from all over the country and all sectors have been sending him since last December, demanding to meet with him because Colombia is an issue here. So within Canada, those are the things that can be done.
Well, Emmanuel, I'll be working to get Minister Graham on the phone or at least a representative from his office, and I hope that you would join us in a conversation with him.
The other thing is we have a website. People can contact us and look at the website and so on. But one thing that people should realize here, 35 years ago, people looked at Vietnam here and decided to organize because they realized the empire was attacking there. Now, you should think that right now, Colombia is the Vietnam in this continent. And what the U.S. wants to do is take the entire continent, and it's doing it from Colombia today. In 3 years, no social movement or organizations will be alive in Colombia. If you heard it today, don't tell us in 3 years that you didn't know.
Is it just Colombia that is Vietnam? There's a couple of Vietnams going on.
There's too many, unfortunately. Too many. The things that make it a parallel to Vietnam today is that the strategy is almost the same and the story is the same. It's helicopters, it's military advisors, it's the idea of
fumigation,
terrorism.
You know, the same story. Napalm, same.
Yeah.
Thank you so much, Emmanuel, for joining us today. And if anybody has any questions or comments about this interview, or if there's something that wasn't clear, you're welcome to call the listener comment line here at CKUT, and that number is 514-398-6787. Extension 2547. 398-6787, extension 2547. Thanks so much for tuning in for this edition of Off the Hour on CKUT 90.3 FM.
The news brought to you live. We'll be right back.